Support for the Media Project comes from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a new Bachelor of Science degree in public health with a focus on social, physical, and behavioral sciences. strose.edu. From Northeast Public Radio, this is the Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
With the Media Project back for another week, you have an opportunity to hear some analysis, insight, we hope, and commentary on media issues of the week. I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union, here with Dr. Alan Chartok, the CEO of Northeast Public Radio. Here in the studio, in fact, he is at this point. And, of course, the incomparable Rosemary Armeo.
Incomparable.
Director of the Journalism Program at UAlbany, investigative journalist. And Rosemary, who, you know, may not be with us that much longer. When are you taking off? End of the school year?
I'm doing some work overseas, yes, after the school year is out.
Amazing.
So when you said back for another week,
yes.
I just was wondering about the spelling of week.
That would be we perform weekly, W-E-A-K-L-Y. Absolutely. Well, we do what we can.
Hey, Rosemary, I understand that you wrote one of our listeners who was less than kind and said, your response was what I thought one of the more brilliant ones of your career. You said, bite me.
I did get some mail while I was away from the Media Project and from the Roundtable, and he said he was glad that the shrill Rosemary Armeo was not there and that we had finally found someone intelligent to bring on. And so I wrote him a note back saying, you get your own personal shrill message after that.
But did you you explained why shrill was an anti-feminist word?
I said that shrill is what men call women they disagree with. It's really sexist. And he said, the fact that you're calling me sexist reaffirms my visceral belief, that you're just awful. And so I wrote back and said, my reaction is visceral too. Bite me.
I love it.
It was not my best moment, but
Provoked. Well, it could be one of the better ones. What's the etymological origin of bite me? Where does that come? What is that? We should do a little research. Maybe one of our listeners, media@wamc.org, if you would like to share some thoughts on that and everything else. So what can you do? So the president of the United States, by the way, his name is Donald Trump. If you've been away and you thought you missed things.
That man.
They talk about him overseas all the time too.
Yeah.
Facebook has this new thing now where it analyzes all of your writings and it tells you the five words that you use most. I was horrified to find that Trump was number two on my list. I really have to do something about that.
Well, what can you do? And we talk about him a lot here as well. But the fact of the matter is the president went back again on Twitter saying that the New York Times had apologized to subscribers for its election coverage. And he says that the coverage now is even worse. So the Times now has taken to tweeting back, fight fire with fire. And they point out that that's false, that in fact, Times stock is up 30% since Donald Trump was elected president.
Yeah.
Isn't that
something? Subscriptions are up. Its popularity is up. And that's true on cable news, too.
And here at WAMC, where we did have, as you all remember, a one-day fund drive for the first time ever at the million-dollar level, an awful lot of people want to put their money where their hearts are.
Well, yes, cable ratings are quite something. Fox News actually broke records, of course, in the first quarter of 17. Highest rated quarter ever in cable news history.
It's amazing.
In total day viewership. So,
and more than double the viewership of CNN, which is number two, which is really striking.
Right.
But MSNBC is rising quickly, too, mostly because of Rachel Maddow, who has taken really strong investigative and I guess you have to say, anti-Trump tack.
Mm-hmm. Right. And the key demo, where they really like this 18 to 54 demo, or is it even younger than that? And MSNBC actually is exceeding CNN in the key demo, so that's really interesting for them.
I can't turn CNN off. I have it on all the time because I never know what's coming up. It is bothersome to me. I think, these incessant panels make me a little crazy because if they have something to talk about, it's great. But when they're making it up as they go along, that's a whole other thing, and that bothers me.
You know, I think it is a relatively inexpensive way to fill yes. their 24-hour news cycle. They have to have all this going on. And the problem is that in order to get people who are supporters of the president so that they have some appearance of balance, they get people who are seemingly intellectually dishonest because it's hard to find reputable conservatives who will stand up for the president.
In fact, many conservatives are getting knocked now as not being conservative enough, but the real problem is they're anti-Trump. But here's the thing about panels. Have you ever watched one where they're balanced and they're arguing back and forth and the moderator actually has it under control? Did you ever close the television down and say, wow, I really learned a lot from that. That really made me think differently.
You're right.
And
that
they
does
don't.
Not happen.
It's,
no, they don't.
It's just, it's show. It's just yelling back and forth.
And I would say, though, that I think there's a difference. Meet the Press, the Sunday morning shows have panels. And
that's
sometimes that's
yeah.
a little different, isn't it, than the CNN constant, the Fox, the MSNBC constant panel stuff.
Aren't those more like mini news conferences where you have a newsmaker and then a panel is asking questions? I'm talking about the panels where they're both giving their opinions.
Right.
Everyone's giving their opinions all at once.
Well, the other thing I wanted to ask you is our real resident expert on feminism and sexism, whether or not there seems to be a penchant for having really, really beautiful anchors and, you know, an occasional person who's been around for a while. But basically, it's, I think, not fair to the rest of womanhood who may not look that way.
Well, I actually am a little bit encouraged. You're absolutely right. You look at Fox or CNN, it's not ideological, it's male. And there are lots of blonde women or dark-haired women with beautifully coiffed hair, short-sleeved shirts always because they have to show your toned arms. It does seem to be a model. However, there is April Ryan is in the news this week, and she is an amazing journalist. She does not fit that mold at all. She's an African-American woman. She is strong as
fabulous.
Can be. She's great, and she's taking a lot of heat from the administration.
But she is not a hired anchor.
No, it's actually radio, so I should say that. I'm trying to think of anyone on TV, the CNN woman, I'm forgetting her name now. I'm having a senior moment. She's Latina. She used to support Marco Rubio, and she has been very strong. And Van Jones, who is always arguing with her. Do you know who I'm talking about?
Yes, but men don't have to be as gorgeous as the women are.
That's
true. For example, would you want a whole panel of just Rex Smith, who is a very handsome man, you know, just being there? But then, no, they have.
No, you would like to have an Alan Chartok there,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, you know.
Oh, my God.
Let us turn to another topic that is also kind of fun, the White House Correspondents' Dinner, which, you know, we have talked about in this
one
show
last
for
thing.
Years.
I'm sorry, Rex.
Oh, of course. Never mind.
One last.
What is it that you want to say? This is not going to be sexist, of course.
There's a program in the evening called Upfront, I believe, with Erin Burnett.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
That's on CNN. Mm-hmm.
On CNN. And she wears very interesting clothing. That's all I have to say about that. So
I know. I think the only thing good about that is her hair. She's got amazing hair.
So back to the White House Correspondents Association dinner, because we really needed that detour, folks, about her hair and how good looking she is.
Yeah. No, it was more than that.
So the
Are we still talking about this Correspondents dinner? Why are they having it?
Well, we've talked about this for years here.
And you know how I feel.
This year, the president announced that he wasn't going. And so one group after another started to drop out because of the stuff that we've talked about for years, that it's really incestuous. But the reason that everybody would go to it, I think, is because all the stars showed up. There was a lot of Hollywood. It was not only the president and the chiefs of staff and all of that, but also because a lot of celebrities came.
Now, let me make sure I'm right about this. The New York Times has never liked this for a lot of reasons, and they don't go.
I wouldn't say never. I think in the last decade, they've stopped.
They've pulled off,
Never has a particular, you know, quotient. After 10 years, it's a never, as opposed to before that. However,
thank you for clearing that up. I did not know that.
But there may be people listening right now who don't know why some of us object strenuously to this. Here's the analogy. You're watching a hockey game, and these guys are batting each other over the head and the rest of it. But when they walk off the field, they walk off with their arms around each other after almost killing each other, you know, on the hockey thing. So then you begin to say, well, Is there really a healthy tension here, or is it all make-believe? And that's why I don't like it. I also don't like the fact that in some of them, the state legislative ones and others, they actually sell tickets to the people they're covering. And I don't think that's healthy at all.
Well, I think that's the case in all of them. It's quite expensive. They sell a lot of tickets, and it's very expensive.
But should reporters be selling to the people they're covering?
No. That's probably not a good idea, is it?
How do we feel about the Legislative Correspondents' Dinner, an event and show here in Albany, then? Are we opposed to that for
I
the
am.
Same reason?
Well, Alan has stopped going since they started making jokes about him.
Yeah,
so
that's a sign of how much you've risen.
That's
you've
right.
become
how,
an icon. You should be there laughing.
Yeah, no. Absolutely.
No,
let's go.
I've never gone because I just don't appreciate the reasons I've already given, what this is all about. I just don't like that.
Well, we always buy a few seats. To
Not always. There was one point you didn't go.
No, I think we've always gone to the LCA show to support our reporters down at the state capitol who work on this show. And actually, when I was a reporter, I sang in the show for many years.
Oh, I know. And you perform all the time as a singer.
And
I never objected to it at the Albany level, which I think may be a little hypocritical. There, it really did seem to be like, okay, we cover each other and we're professionals, but on the outside, we can all have a laugh together and it all is in good fun. But the White House Correspondents' Dinner has become something different. We have a president who is attacking the press. We have never seen attacks like this since possibly John Adams' time. I wasn't around to check it out. But he has called us enemy of the people. So you're going to invite him to come and break bread with you and to make jokes at our expense? This is serious stuff. My objection to the White House Correspondents' Dinner is specifically Trump.
I think that's accurate, and I think his objection is the same. The White House decided that Trump wouldn't go because, according to Sean Spicer, he of authoritative voice, the staff is standing in solidarity with the president who has been treated unfairly. We hope, including the president, that things improve and we can attend next year. So they're not coming because they say the press has treated the president unfairly.
And by the way, you could correct me if I'm wrong, Rex, but I think that Mario Cuomo, Andrew's father, skipped one or two of them because he was ticked off too.
Yes, and now Andrew Cuomo has not attended an LCA show at all. So he stopped coming, and therefore a lot of people, if the governor's not there, that gives license to a lot of other people not to be
there.
Well,
I don't respect him all that much, but I do respect him for that.
I think that the day of these dinners, of these nights out together, that's long gone. We are in a very adversarial position with the government, and it's fake. It's just fake to get up there and make jokes.
Yeah, I think it is really hard. It's impossible in the current environment with the Trump White House, and it is even difficult in Albany these days with the relationship between the press corps and the Cuomo administration. But what do you think about the fact that here's something that's kind of an offshoot of this? Here's President Trump who denounces the mainstream media, who says it's all fake news, and as soon as the health care bill fails, what does he do? He doesn't call Breitbart News. He calls the Washington Post
and the
New York Times, you know, and when there are facts that he needs to cite, he cites the New York Times all the time. So which is it? Is it fake news? Is it unimportant or is it authoritative except when it's criticizing
him? From a consistency point of view, this guy is anything but consistent. In other words, up is down, down is up, in is out, you know, we all know that. And he will play it as he wants. It's a rigged election till he wins. You know, then it's not a rigged election. So he's a scary dude, let me put it that way. And nothing he says means an awful lot. But yes, you're right. You want to know who the richest person in the world is now?
Putin.
No. Second richest, actually. Jeff Bezos, right? That's what you're going to say? Who owns the Washington Post?
Jeff Bezos, who owns Amazon.
Yeah.
And the result has this little plaything called the Washington Post.
God bless
which
him.
Is doing the best journalism in America right now.
Bill Gates is still richer, but aside
from
that.
Not according to what I read this morning.
No, I think you're misreading.
I still think it's Putin. I mean, he's got more money than all of
Put
them.
Put another way. How would you know?
Yeah, that's exactly it. I mean, he's not checking in the questionnaire from Forbes, so he's not going to be on the list. But
now, explain something to us here. Rosemary used to be the head of an organization called Investigative Reporters and Editors, IRE.
Yes.
It's the foremost organization of investigative reporters and editors, as the name suggests. And it encourages investigative reporting in part by rewarding those by running seminars and so on. And now it's doing a database library to help flesh out stories. But now they're doing something.
They've always had, since I was there in the 90s, they had the data library. They would get big troves of information. These are in the days before leaks and WikiLeaks. And then they would clean it up, make it searchable, and then open it up to any journalist. So you could look, for example, at lending patterns at banks across America. That was one of their favorite pieces of data. Now they have a new mission, which is to save government data that many of us fear the Trump administration is dumping hiding, not adding to, somehow taking out of the public domain. So they work with hackers and scrapers and and data journalists to get this information and preserve it in a way that we can still use it
and
for
how do we
reporting.
Get it?
You become a member of the organization. It's really inexpensive. And you then request the information. And they even have researchers who you'll say, I'm doing a story on X. Do you have any information? And they will tell you what's there.
And tell us how we access this again.
Well, the members, as again the name suggests, are mostly reporters and editors. But IRE.org on the internet.
It's a database library, a 20-gigabyte trove of government information, millions of records.
That's a lot.
So that's going to be preserved in the event that the Trump administration cuts off access.
It's or really unless they get their friends, the Russians, to come in and get rid of it all by hacking.
Well, that's why it's going to be on the servers now of IRE, so it'll be preserved. And
well, you think
I'm
they
so
have
glad
access
they're doing
to the servers
it.
At IRE?
Yeah, I don't think that. I hope not. You know, there are government workers all over America who are doing some of the same thing. I think national parks, EPA, these are scientists who don't want their important work to disappear as Trump and Price and Pruitt would like to happen, and they are preserving it.
Well, and it will be interesting in that regard to watch, and a real challenge for the news media to figure out how to report climate change, as the government is now in the hands of people who are climate science deniers, and they are talking about funding so-called red teams, people who would actually attack scientists, this tiny little fraction of scientists who are not supporters of the overwhelming climate science.
97%.
Yeah, and so they're going to fund the red teams who will attack climate science. And so it is difficult because many of us have for years not given equal weight to the climate science deniers because they are outliers. Now the outliers are in charge of policy. It's hard to cover.
It's really scary. And it isn't just simply, you know, whether you believe the ice caps are melting and that will have an effect on us. Hard to deny that, but many do. Today we have a story where the EPA now is rejecting their own EPA scientists' report that a certain insecticide should not be used. It's dangerous to the humans who apply it. That's being thrown out.
What's the matter with you, Rosemary? Don't you understand we're talking about jobs here? So you kill a few thousand people, several thousand people. Doesn't matter. It's all jobs. Don't you understand?
It just broke my heart when Trump is there signing the bill to gut the EPA.
It's disgusting.
And he's got all those coal miners standing behind him. He's using the media to give an optic of, I have the support of the coal miners. And he's just exploiting the people who are going to be hurt the most.
And what about
his policies, we have to keep telling people, are not going to help coal
miners. And what
about
their lung disease? I mean, they're standing there, you're saying, well, wait a second now. You know, every time I read a story, you're being collapsed upon or there's some lung disease coming out because people are mistreated.
You know, how do you cover this? NPR had a story this week out of Gillette, Wyoming. Did you listen to that? Which is a big coal-producing area. Mm. And the mayor there is saying, oh, it's been like Christmas every day since Trump came into office. You know, jobs are back. We have overtime. It's been fabulous. And I understand that's the other side. You have to report two sides. But it just gives the idea that this is a good thing. And there's just so much evidence it's not. How do we get the balance?
It is really difficult because when you write the story, the truth story, which a lot of news organizations have done, saying that coal jobs really, Gillette, Wyoming aside, coal jobs in the heart of coal country in West Virginia, Kentucky, and so on, are not going to come back because they've been lost due to other fuel competition and automation. So you write that story, but it doesn't carry the same weight, and the Trump administration and its supporters will attack the journalists for telling that story.
It's tremendously frustrating to be a journalist right now because you are bound by rules of balance and fairness. And yet, as soon as you try to do this, as soon as you put in the other voice, it looks like things are equal and they're not. I have rarely been this frustrated in journalism.
So here's one of the offshoots of this. By the way, if you're just joining us, that's Rosemary Armeo, the University at Albany. Dr. Alan Chartok is here from Northeast Public Radio, and I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union. We're the media project from Albany, New York. Here's one of the offshoots of this. The tension over the news coverage, which has been ramped up by Trump's campaign and by his pronouncements since becoming president, is leading to threats against journalists. And newsrooms across the country have felt that it's necessary to increase security in order to protect journalists from the potential attacks that they think could come. That is more than troubling. For years, I've attended events at for the Committee to Protect Journalists and looked at the results around the world of journalists being killed or attacked, and thought, what a terrible thing that this happens in places like Russia and Uganda and the Philippines, of course. And now we worry about it happening in the United States.
Is there a lot of evidence that it is beginning to happen?
I don't think we've seen people being physically attacked except by police sometimes when they're covering things. There have been instances where reporters have been thrown to the ground and mistreated by police who are trying to clear an area, and they see somebody with a camera and even with reporter credentials, and they say, nuts to that, get out of my way.
Right.
But we have seen angry crowds at Trump rallies, both his campaign rallies since he was elected president and his campaign rallies before that. We've seen them poking their fingers, you know, and denouncing you to the reporters. Tell the truth, tell the truth. And I think reporters are fearful when they encounter this.
Well, even the Sean Spicer press conferences are extremely threatening. The April Ryan incident that I referenced earlier, he's saying, don't shake your head. Did you see the video? She's not shaking her head. She just asked a question, and she's a pro. She sat there emotionless. And she did, with words, try to say, no, it isn't me. It's, you know, this is going on in Congress.
But,
just be quiet. That's intimidating. Well, yeah. It gives the okay to...
I've thought about that, Rosemary. She's African-American.
Yeah.
And, of course, I believe one of the underlying themes of the Trump administration is racist.
Yep.
And so to pick on... one person who allegedly was shaking her head, if she was, okay, but if she wasn't, doesn't matter. He picks on the black woman,
yep.
And that sends the signal to the Trump supporters.
Yeah, I think they like it, and that's just so odious. Yeah. And again, the latest Gallup poll, 36% of the American people still are with the program.
Yes.
Astounding.
Yes, but only 36%. Percent. In other words,
you say only 36,
it's the lowest approval. It's the lowest approval in history of an incoming president.
But it's fueled by his base. That's 82% of Republicans are still satisfied with him. It's because the independents and the Democrats are so opposed to him that the number is as low as 36.
I've heard all of that, except I still don't think 36 is low. That is more than one third of the population of this country, the voting population, thinks that he's just doing just a great dandy
job. That's
the
number that's gotten some dictators in the past into office.
By the way, before we leave, we should update people on a topic that we talked about last week, and that is the effort to keep the press away from the State Department. We talked about the fact that Rex Tillerson, the Secretary of State, when he went to Asia, took only one reporter, an attractive young woman, by the way, on the plane with him, and then declined to take pool reporters with him when he went to the demilitarized zone. Now, after that criticism, Rex Tillerson is saying that, okay, in my trip to Turkey and Belgium, I'm going to bring two pool reporters, one each from Reuters news service and from Fox News,
of course.
This is still not good. State Department Correspondents Association says it's a much smaller pool than usual. And what it means is that a lot of news organizations are going to have to travel independently, separately, and will not be there when a lot of the news is going down.
And when the pools, we've talked about this before, Rex, but when the pools are established, they're rotating, right?
Yeah.
It's not as if the politically acceptable are the only ones who are allowed to go.
Right. I think this is ugly, and I'm glad that organizations are protesting. I want them to continue to. On the other hand, there is nothing wrong with traveling independently and making sources among the foreign reporters who are covering this from the other side. That will make for better reporting.
That's right. And
this is not going to help him in the end.
Yeah. And actually, the speculation that's really wonderful is that one of the reasons he didn't want to have press with him is because the press would gather in the bars with local reporters and kind of see what's going on.
So now they're
going
to gather in the bars with the local reporters and skip his little stupid events, his ceremonies. So it does not help him. I mean, if I were going to combat the press, there are better ways to do it. You and I could advise them on how to really shut out the press.
Why don't you do that? Set up a little consulting.
Well, we could make a little money. You know,
yeah.
You're going to need it traveling overseas.
Forget Steve Bannon. We'll show you how to really do it.
All right. The Media Project has ended this week. It's true. We're out of time. Rosemary Armeo and Alan Shartok and Rex Smith, we are grateful to you for joining us and hope we come back next week. All right.
The Media Project is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. Alan Chartok is CEO of WAMC, Professor Emeritus at the State University of New York, commentator, columnist, and author. Rex Smith is editor of the Times Union. And Rosemary Armeo is the director of the Journalism Program at the University at Albany. You can listen to or podcast The Media Project anytime at WAMC.org or just download the WAMC app for your iPhone or Android at the Play Store today. Thanks for listening.
Headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give three cheers for freedom of the press.